Sharknado is the only sci-fi film that dares to ask, what if killer sharks could fly around in a tornado? In the latest and quite possibly final installment of the series, The Last Sharknado, it's about time. One of our favorite drag queens, Alaska Thunderfuck, death drops for her life in hopes of surviving this tornado of murderous sharks. Now, with the ability to travel through time.
The film has it all. Sharks, more sharks, Alaska Thunderfuck, and so many celebrity cameos it could sink the love boat. Today, Alaska Thunderfuck joins us to take a bite out of the last Sharknado film and to talk about playing the daughter of Star Trek's Marina Sirtis in the movie.
Plus, Alaska weighs in on the Whitney Houston documentary, Whitney.
And what can reality TV stars do to maximize their appearance on any show?
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of generous support of fabulous people like you. Listen to in-depth interviews with all of the world's top drag queens, Lady Bunny, Coco Peru, Peaches Christ, and the best gals from Drag Race, and even RuPaul, only by becoming a member at feastoffun.com/plus.
Hello?
My name's yours. What's Alaska? Does it work that way?
You got it. You're good at that.
Hello, my fellow Slytherin. This is Fausto.
And Mark, how are you?
I'm good. Wait, you're Slytherin too?
I am. I took the quiz on the Harry Potter website and I was a Slytherin.
I was a Hufflepuff, if you can believe it. Why not?
I love that.
So everybody who wins All-Stars in the future will get to star in their own Sharknado movie. Is that how it works?
I don't know, but sure. Well, no, this is the last Sharknado movie. This is it.
So the latest and last.
I got in under the wire.
It was so good they had to make just one more for you.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'll get a spinoff.
Alaska jumps the Sharknado.
But I don't want it to be on sci-fi. I want it to be on like Lifetime.
Oh, I love those Lifetime movies. I'd love to see you in one of those fighting sharks. What's your character in this? What are you a boy? Or are you a girl? Or what's going on?
I'm a gorgeous woman, of course.
Okay. You play a woman or you play a drag queen?
I play a woman.
Yay!
Yeah, I know. I think it's the first time in my career I've done that.
But everybody acts as though you're just like a real woman in this.
Yeah.
Why not? You're gorgeous.
I play a bad guy.
Oh, you
so
do?
I'm sort of, I feel like I'm jumping into the tradition of like Ursula the Sea Witch and like Scar. And I'm sort of like the gender variant, like kind of villain person.
Well, and for people who are not familiar with the Sharknado series, it's the premise is a tornado that spits out sharks. So basically everybody's kind of like in a blender and their body parts can get bitten off at random.
Yeah.
But you're
just sort of like Drag Race.
Pretty much exactly like it.
But this your episode or your installment of this franchise involves time traveling Sharknados.
That's correct.
It sounds like somebody got really stoned with some good strong Alaska Thunderfuck weed and came up with the premise of this film.
That's what the writers and the director and the producers, like, they're like, if you can believe it, none of us are on drugs. So that makes it even kind of weirder and scarier. It's definitely this fantasy world where like they really just go for anything and anything can happen, I guess.
And Ian Somerhalder from Beverly Hills 90210 stars in the film as the hero.
It's Ian Ziering, not...
Oh, whoops!
Yeah.
The guy who begins the letter I. The hunk, the blonde with the curly hair.
I-N, yes. Yeah. And I feel terrible because we just did a bunch of press at Comic-Con, and I said his last name, but I said Zierling.
Oh, shit.
Because I was nervous. And, I'm really bad at names in general. First names are really hard. So, like, last names, it's like, forget about it. But I called him Ian Zierling. But no, it's Ian Zierling.
And who can forget Tara Reid from American Pie?
I know.
Why are you saying that?
I know.
She's a star.
She really is. And you can really feel, the Sharknado family is very caring and protective over her. And they love her very much. So that was nice to be around.
Well, she, you know, for people who are not familiar, she had she was definitely a huge star because of the American Pie films. And then she had a career setback when she accidentally slipped out her boob in a
she had a nipple carpet.
Yeah. And people are like horrified about that, you know. And essentially, that's what happened.
I mean, haven't we all done that?
That happens to me all the time at work. It's like, oops, sorry, my boobs are showing.
God, these nips have taken out some great women. Janet Jackson, Tara Reid.
Yeah.
I blame Justin Timberlake.
If Hillary hadn't shown her boobs, we would not be in this mess with Trump.
I know.
And of course you have a soap opera star, Vivica Fox.
Yes. I wasn't around when she was there. Like, this movie's so full of cameos. But the one that I was most starstruck by, and I shared a lot of scenes with her, was, of course, Marina Sirtis from Star Trek The Next Generation. And I had all these scenes with her, and I had to, like, look into her gorgeous giant eyes, and I completely forgot all my lines.
Did you offer her some chocolate ice cream?
No, I didn't. We were so starstruck. It was Jeremy and me, and we were over there, and we were shooting in Romania, and it was like 4 a.m. was our call time, so we got in the van, it was pitch dark, there was this woman in the van with us, and we were riding to the thing, so we were like, okay, let's make small talk while we're riding to the set. And she was like telling us about where she was from, and she was like, yes, I'm Greek, but I grew up in England. And Jeremy was like, jokingly, he was like, oh, that's like Deanna Troi.
No.
And she was like, that's me. Like, it was like dead silent in the car. We were like, wait, what?
Did you not know she was going to be in the film?
No, we didn't know anything. Like, everything was super secret because they want to keep all the everything on lockdown.
You were in a car with Marina Sirtis, and you're like, she sounds just like Deanna Troi.
Yeah, dude.
Oh my god!
And so then that very day you had to go do lines with her and do filming.
We're talking about working on a script. Yeah, yeah. Let's be clear here, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of things.
We don't bump them tracks like we used to, huh? We don't clickety clack like we used to.
But I mean, I imagine that she's very flattered. I saw on Twitter that you dressed up as her character of Deanna Troi for Comic-Con.
She said, bloody brilliant. Heart, yes. Heart, 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 heart.
So that very day you had to like film with her.
Yeah, pretty much. And I was so good at learning my lines. Like, I studied them. Like, I was trying to be really professional. But, like, when she, like, came up to me and was, like, yelling at me. And, like, I was, like, I literally can't remember a word I'm supposed to say.
So it was, like, Saturday Night Live. They had, like, cue cards right off camera.
I wish there were cue cards.
Were you wearing a big wig? You could have had an earpiece and they could have just fed you the lines like they feed RuPaul, right?
No, I was not wearing a big wig, and this was very out of my comfort zone, because I got there, and they showed me this little fucking Valerie Cherish wig, and I was like, I can't wear that, because I brought hair options, because you never know.
Mm-hmm. Because you want to look good.
it's drag. So, like, drag is a language that not everyone is fluent in. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm not a petite little woman that can just put on a wig and look really fierce. Yeah. Like, they show me this wig and I was like, I don't really think I can do this. And they were like, it is too late. They have already shot with the stunt double.
Oh, no.
So I was stuck. But once I saw it and I saw some of the footage, I think it looks cool. And it's a character. So I'm sort of like Charlize Theron. And I'm sort of like changing my image for a role.
You know that Mad Max Fury Road just got nominated or voted by Australians as the greatest Australian film of this century.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They like really, really love Furiosa, the Charlize Theron character. So maybe, you know, short haired for women is in and you're ahead of the curve.
Your prediction that lesbians were going to chop off part of their arm for a new look was never happened.
Thankfully.
How do you feel about that?
I'm grateful.
So Marina played your mom?
Yes.
What was that? What's that mother-daughter relationship like?
It's very tumultuous. My character really hates her for some reason. Like, it's never explained why. She just torments her.
Mm. Oh, so you're like the bad seed.
I am. Like, I'm really nasty and mean.
So Marina's a nice mommy and you're an evil little bitch.
You pretty much.
And does the time travel get involved with your characters, or is it that just the sharks are traveling through time?
The Sharknado somehow is like a time vortex. So the main characters, like the crew, they travel through time to different various time periods, like pretty much every time period you can do a film in. So I happen to be in medieval times in Camelot. Wow.
So this is very Star Trek sort of holodeck episode, right. And Captain Janeway could show up and say, time travel. Since my first day on the job as Starfleet captain, I swore I'd never let myself get caught in one of these godforsaken time paradoxes. The future is the past is the future. It all gives me a headache.
It's that. It's very Star Trek in that way, because they use any excuse to use that old Western set on the Next Generation.
I can imagine that acting for a film like this, for Sharknado, can actually be very tricky, because you're walking this fine line between a horror, drama, and comedy.
Well, yes, it's comedic for the audience, but for the characters, it's like super serious. Mm-hmm. And they were like, everything is very serious for the actors and the characters.
You have to take it as though it's actually real. That's your motivation. This is really happening. These sharks are really coming at you.
Well, that's the danger of these kind of campy films. Like, if you look at the return of the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, the reason it failed is because all the actors were not taking their roles seriously. Mm-hmm. And to sort of make these kind of films work, everybody has to be sort of sold on the idea while you're filming it. Now you can laugh all you want after the film is made, sort of like the way they did with Showgirls, you know. But when you're in it, you have to really take this leap of faith and say, you know, I'm not going to destroy my career by doing this ridiculous film.
Exactly.
Was being in this film a hard choice for you to make? I mean, we know you and we know that you're attracted to eccentric material, but maybe the people who pitched it to you didn't know that.
I definitely know Ian has told the story that he didn't want to do it when the first script came around. He was like, this is going to be stupid and it's going to ruin my career. But his wife was like, no, try it. Just do it. And it became like, here we are like six films later. So, and the fans literally are so dedicated to it and they love it so much. So, I thought it was a great fit for me, because you're right. I love doing like weird stuff.
Yeah. You're also in another film called The Quiet Room.
That's right.
Where you play a monster, I guess a ghoul, a monster. And this time around, to make it extra scary, you're out of drag.
What? In this one? No, I'm in drag in this one.
Oh, you are? Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
Because I saw the trailer and they showed Katya playing a nurse.
Oh, well, no, I'm in a look.
So you have a specific look that they sort of designed for you, but we don't get to see it until we actually go to the movie.
No, it's really scary and really gross.
Mm. And you play Hopeless Hattie.
Yeah.
Why are you so hopeless?
That was my nickname in high school, actually.
Nuh-uh. Really?
No, I'm just kidding. No, she's like this scary, like, water demon who sort of attaches to people who have attempted to kill themselves. And she's like a demon that hangs around in a psych ward.
Oh.
It's an interesting path that you've taken in your acting career, because initially you did study acting in college and you wanted to be an actor. And you know, along the road to this place that you're at, you became a very successful drag queen.
Yeah.
So where would you like to take your career?
I'm just really like, I just feel really lucky and grateful. And I never really can feel resentful about Alaska for very long, because she's given me so many opportunities to do all these crazy things. So if people want to put me in drag for movies, like, please, by all means. Like, I like it and I can do it, and that, so I'm happy to do it.
But would you ever like seek out roles for yourself outside of drag, just to sort of expand your visual vocabulary? Or
sure. And I've auditioned for TV shows and stuff out of drag, but I'm like, I don't know. Drag is more fun to look at.
Well, it's certainly a visually strong language, and it grabs people's attention.
Yeah, especially now. I mean, we're living in this time where everyone's wearing wigs and lashes, and it's just sort of like, it just makes sense. So I'm happy to do it either way.
Did you foresee that happening when you were at Blue Moon in Pittsburgh? It's like that this future was going to be, everybody was going to be a cross-dresser. And yeah. I mean, no, like, even these mainstream actors are like doing lip sync challenge. Mm-hmm. Tom Holland, Channing Tatum are cross-dressing for the same reasons you and I do it, for the thrill of it.
Because it's cool. I guess it caught on.
Mm.
That's good.
I know that for American Horror Story, they were consulting with you for one of the roles in that.
Yes, for the character Elizabeth Taylor.
What kind of advice did you give them?
Well, I think my advice was pretty much wear nails. And
I remember you saying to me one time, it's like, I know I said, if you're not wearing nails, you're not doing drag, but I regret saying that.
Well, it's definitely that song has become a prison for my hands, and I paid for it.
Why aren't you just wearing gloves now with nails on them?
Now I'm wearing little pussycat nails, so I still am technically wearing nails, but without the inconvenience of like horribly long claws.
Oh,
well, I remember in All Stars that you won. Fair and square, by the way.
Thank you.
I do remember that you were like wearing boots in one lip sync.
That's right.
And I was really glad that you did that, because I feel like high heel shoes are dangerous for all of us.
They're murder.
Yes. High heels are barbaric.
You know, that's what Prince, the entertainer, that's what killed him.
What?
Yeah. So Prince, the musician, with a symbol, you know, purple rain.
Yes, I'm aware.
He was a Jehovah's Witness, and he did not believe in, Jehovah's Witnesses do not believe in blood transfusions. And he also was a very short man who insisted on, the minute he woke up in the morning, wearing platform shoes. A lot of them were high heels. And throughout the day, he wore high heels, which caused all sorts of knee and hip problems. And he needed a double knee and double hip replacement surgery, but he wouldn't get it because he didn't believe in blood transfusions. So as a consequence of that, he got on painkillers, which escalated his use of it until he just passed out in his elevator one day and he died.
Dang.
I hope you heels have an elevator barbaric. In your house. Yes.
I always say, like, if you're a queen and you're doing an event like Pride, or you're doing some event where you have to be on your feet for like Pride or conventions, like, girl, don't do it to yourself. Figure out a way to make those shoes flat.
You know, on Cooking with Drag Queens, we require all the drag queens to be wearing flat shoes.
For safety.
It's safety, and it also destroys our wooden floors.
And then also, and then also too, you have these queens, when they put on heels, they're like 5 inches taller than you sometimes. You're just like, yeah. You want everybody kind of in the same visual plane.
Can you explain to me the line in Peanut Butter, high heels on a hardwood floor, coming back for more?
Because
I don't get it.
What do you mean? She's wearing high heels on hardwood floors, making
noise. She's messing up the floor.
Well, she's making
Ruining that parquet. She's ruining it. Mm-hmm.
Jade from the first season of RuPaul's Drag Race, she insisted one time wearing high heel shoes, and we still have little holes in the kitchen because of that.
Foster, girl, it's that true.
And I'm like, girl, you're destroying my floor. So I'm like, get out of here. Take these off. She's like, I can't. I'll be sure. No. Sharknado has a lot of celebrity cameos. I mean, look at this lineup here. Frankie Muniz from Malcolm in the Middle. Gary Busey. Game of Thrones creator George R.R. Martin. Mm-hmm. Penn and Teller. Kelly Osbourne.
Yes.
Tom Daly, the Olympic diver.
Kelly Ripa. David Hasselhoff. It's an illustrious...
Even the Hulk, Lou Ferrigno. That's amazing.
Yeah, they have tons of cameos.
And do you think that this is really the last one, or is this like Cher's final tour? Or will they reboot the whole thing?
I don't know. They're saying this is the last one, but I have a feeling we haven't seen the last of Sharknado.
You know what? I was looking for interviews with Marina Sirtis about the film. I came up with another one. I came up with another interview, and she talks about being in this movie called The Wicked Lady with Faye Dunaway. Have you seen it?
No, I have not.
Oh my God, I'll send you a link to the interview, but it's like, it's incredible. I guess the big scene that everybody talks about in this movie is where Faye Dunaway, she plays basically like Robin Hood, except she keeps all the money, and she's a mean bitch, and she's whips poor Deanna Troi. Like, I think she's shirtless or something like that, too. It's crazy.
Oh my God.
I know. It's like, it's an over the top film, but I think it's one of Marina's first pieces of work.
I live. Mm. I've been really into these videos of Betty Davis in her old age, and she's like, the worst actress in all of Hollywood is Faye Dunaway. She is unprofessional.
Do you know why she probably said that?
Why?
Because Joan Crawford was asked, like, are there any actresses that remind you of yourself today, or who's a good actress in Hollywood? And Joan was just like, well, I think Faye Dunaway has what it takes to be an A-list actress. And I think this is pretty much right after Bonnie and Clyde came out. So she hated Joan so much she was going to dog her any way she could. No, but like those old Betty Davis interviews with Dick Cavett are so much fun. You have to watch them all.
You know, she recorded an album.
Oh, I'm off book. I know.
Yeah.
I know her words.
Whatever happened to Baby J? Have you heard that?
I've heard the whole thing. I own it.
It's one of my favorite things that she's ever done. And you can watch it on YouTube of her performing that. I think it was on Dick Cavett, wasn't it? And she's just standing there on some variety show. And she's just standing there
Andy
like...
Williams.
Not sure what to do with herself, you know? She's just like, is it an album of poetry?
It's more like Chubby Checker.
Well, you like your old broads. You're doing it on Golden Girls coming up at the Laurie Beecham Theater in New York.
That's correct.
What is that show like? You play like all four Golden Girls or what?
Maybe. You have to come see it to find out.
Give us a little teaser. I'm not going to be in New York, unfortunately.
But a lot of the listeners are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we may be bringing it to Chicago at some point. It's really fun to do, and my best friend Jeremy and I, we sort of are religiously devoted to the Golden Girls. Mm. So this is like... This is a deep dive for the super fans, like we do with the music that happens in the show, and we tell stories and we enjoy the women.
Mm.
There's actually more than just a theme song to the Golden Girls in the Golden Girls, like music.
There's so much music because all of these actresses were, they were trained singers and dancers. And so they, any excuse they could get to have them sing a song or wear a funny costume or dance or whatever, they would do it. So, yeah.
So all the music that you're doing is music that was done on the show?
That's correct. Mostly. Oh,
wow. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I remember B. Arthur doing a song about getting high. Mm-hmm.
That's from How to Get Ahead in Show Business?
Everyone these days is turning on. Remember when pot was for plants and a roach was a bug? You know,
with Rock Hudson.
With Rock Hudson.
Mm-hmm. I forgot about that.
They talk about poppers even. That.
Poppers, cocaine, blow, slot, heroin, every drug there is. And the whole point of the song is the double entendres.
Mm-hmm. It's so good.
That's so good. Well, thank you for being a friend, too. Like, that version that's on the TV show, that's actually a cover song from somebody else. We did a whole podcast on your shitty gay anthems are actually just cover songs.
Oh, my God.
Your gay anthems are just shitty cover songs. No, that was the working title. We changed it to something
A little bit more kind.
A little more kind, you know. But, like, you know, what was some of the other ones?
Well, a lot of these songs that we love and celebrate, we think they were originally written for us, but they were actually repurposed from other songs. Mm-hmm. So, like Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun, that was part of the score for Tu Wong Fu. Not only that was a cover of Cindy's original song, but originally it was a very anti-women song written from the viewpoint of a guy dismissing women, saying, oh, those girls, all they just want to have fun, you know. And Cyndi Lauper turned it into a feminist anthem.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fierce. I never knew that.
And Thank You for Being a Friend was written by, I forget who it was. He was some dude. He sang it first.
Yeah, Andrew Gold. The podcast a while. Andrew Gold.
And his mother was somebody famous. She was a famous singer.
Oh. Yeah.
She did the, you know, in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, when Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, Marilyn Monroe hits a very high note. That high note is not her. It's that dude's mom.
Oh, come on, lip sync.
Have you seen the Whitney Houston documentary, Whitney?
I sure did. We saw it in the theater. It was so sad.
Honey, it shook me to the core.
I know. Like it sort of haunted me. Mm-hmm. Like, even after I left the theater, I was like, I can't think of her without kind of crying a little bit.
For you, like, you know, certainly you're not, you know, considered the greatest singer ever to live, but
I would contest that.
But you certainly come from very humble origins, and you've made it very good living and very successful name and career as an entertainer. And I imagine, like Whitney Houston, you know, a lot of people's like careers and well-being is riding on your shoulders, and that can be a lot of pressure.
Well, I mean, luckily, I am able to be myself and be authentic to who I am. And I think it was the immense pressure from all around, from her family, from the industry, that like really, I mean, created a problem for her. So like, luckily, I'm a fucking drag queen and I can do whatever I want, you know?
Where she was more painted into a box. So you think that maybe that might have been a destructive behavior? Like, I guess that's at the core of the question of Whitney Houston's documentary is like, why was Whitney Houston ultimately self-destructive?
Well, they think a lot of drug dependency and stuff comes from people being socially isolated. And I think when you're at that pinnacle of a star, that much of a diva, your world can get very small.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. And for you, go ahead.
And Robin was her one person, and whether that was even they were lovers or not, it was just the fact that it could be perceived that way. That was enough to be like, okay, Robin's got to go. Your best friend in the world since you were a kid has to go. Bye.
So, well, like, certainly that, in your life, you've had similar experiences of people that you were close to that you're no longer with, or, you know, it's certainly like, you know, the fact that you're still with Jeremy and collaborating after all these years is a testament to your friendship to them.
Was he your Robin?
Yeah.
is Jeremy Robin?
Jeremy is my Robin. Jeremy's totally my Robin. Yeah, I don't know what I'd do without him.
Aww.
And I think it's so important to have those kind of relationships where someone can tell you no or tell you, like, this is a bad decision, as much as encourage and inspire you to do new things.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Any plans to get to Erie this summer?
I'm actually going to Erie in a couple of days.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to, it's our reunion, I guess.
Your family reunion?
No, my school reunion.
You're going to your high school reunion?
I'm scared.
Did you go to McDowell? No, Waterford.
I went to McDowell for 1 year, but I graduated from Fort LaBeouf.
Oh, wow. So you're going back to Waterford, or?
Yeah, it's going to be like the Republican National Convention. I feel like Sarah Silverman, though, like in her show, I Heart America, or America, I Love You, or whatever it's called, because I'm like going to, like, I'm like, I really don't belong, but I'm going to like a super probably conservative party. But I don't know. I guess I'm going to try and be like open-minded and open-hearted. And I feel like I'm really afraid to go, but I'm glad I'm going.
Well, first of all, are you bringing security with you? Are you going? Are you going in drag? Or do you have
a date? I'm not. I'm not going in drag, and I'm literally just. I'm going by myself. Maybe I'll bring my mom. Like I want to bring my mom.
I think you should take a film crew and do it in drag. If you want my personal opinion, that way, because nobody's gonna fuck with you then.
Well,
Alaska Thundershop shows up at her 25-year reunion. That's amazing.
I don't think it's been 25 years, but thank you.
10-year reunion, right?
15? How many? I don't... It was 2003, so...
15 years.
15, yeah.
Wow. I think you should do it in drag. Are they having it like at a fancy hotel?
No, it's just like a get-together at my friend's house. Like, okay. She's having people over. So it's like very low-key. I'm not putting on a dress for this occasion.
It's so funny because, like, when Mark was on he just got done filming a reality TV show called Alt for Norge, which is Norway's kind of a top reality TV show. It translates to the Great Norway Adventure. And
that's amazing.
I'll send you some pictures of me and my Norwegian drag.
And we can't say what happens this season, if Mark wins, I'll be flying up to Norway to meet him. And I had to tell my employer and some of my coworkers that I was going to be doing this, and that's why I was going to be taking some time off. And everybody asked me, you got to show up in drag and don't tell anybody.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, Mrs. Mark Felian.
Wow.
Do you have any advice for Mark? I mean, because this is a big opportunity he's been given. And I know that you've maximized certainly the opportunities you've received from reality television. And I noticed one phenomena is that the contestants tend to like talk each other down as a way to sort of like make themselves comfortable in whatever mindset that they have. You know, RuPaul talks about that as your inner saboteur, but it's this idea that like we are seeking to be comfortable in the way things are and not searching for growth or new opportunities. And so when we're presented in a circumstance like this, our own community, we tell people, oh, you don't have to put out merchandise, or you don't have to look for gigs, or you don't have to do this or that. What can you say to Mark about breaking out of the mold and maximizing this opportunity?
How do I get that coin, girl? To sum that all up.
Because the other contestants are like, I'm not doing anything, you know, and I'm just like, oh my God, you're on like Norway's top reality TV show.
Well, do you have a catchphrase on the show?
I try to get him one to say my way or Norway.
I mean, there's going to be lots of cock talk.
Okay. Okay, here's what you do. What? Put out a single. Okay. Then put the name of the single on a t-shirt. Then release a sex tape. You'll be fine.
Oh, really?
You think a sex tape actually does help?
Sure.
Did you do that?
No one would want to see it.
Oh, there's plenty of racer chasers out there.
I just have to find somebody to do a sex tape with.
How about me? I don't want to do it, though.
that's the point.
Well, I mean, you were in a porn Ass Controller 9.
Yeah.
That's true. You know, Sharknado 6, Ass Controller 9. Hey, I love the sequels.
6 and 9.
Ooh.
I love the deep sequels.
But you were not having sex in this movie.
No, I was very clear that I didn't want to be around it. But the actors were really nice. That was a really fun experience. Like, I flew out to Vegas. We shot it in a studio. And, like, I studied that character. And I knew my lines. And I hit my mark. And it was a very nice experience.
Well, what is sort of like a role that you would, like a dream role for you to be in, like to take your career to the next level that you would like to be in?
Oh, geez. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think it's unwritten.
Just like Natasha Bedingfield.
Hallelujah. I've got like, it's these characters that I never would have imagined, like Hattie and even like the character in Sharknado, like they're really cool. And who knows? So who knows what some amazing writer is going to create for me to do.
Oh, did you ever give Detox her, was it $110,000?
No, they donated it.
Oh, you
we donated it to a snake sanctuary.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so brilliant.
Oh, snakes need homes too.
Yeah. It's true.
People get these little tiny snakes and they think they're gonna be great pets, and then they eat their cats and dogs and they're huge, and then they're like, I'll just let it loose in Florida, and the next thing you know, it's devastating the wildlife.
Yeah.
Well, it's like with the Slytherin, and I was really appreciative that you actually like came out as a Slytherin.
Mm.
Because Slytherins are misunderstood.
Yeah.
They're essential to the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that. Mm-hmm.
And we're sort of doomed to always speak the truth and always fight for justice, but we're sometimes perceived as to be the bad guy.
Exactly.
Alaska, how much did you love the season finale of RuPaul's Drag Race season 10? And butterfly gate.
Oh, God.
Did you know they cross state lines with those butterflies? I'm a vegan.
Lord. Look, it's, I mean, it's, I just, it's the age of the reveal, clearly. Mm-hmm. And I think that we've seen where that can end up going. And now, I think the most successful performances are when the person's mostly focused on the lip sync and the performance. And if by some chance something spectacular happens with a costume or something that comes out of that performance, then that's great. But if it's just like, I'm literally showing up in a giant thing, and then I have to worry about unlocking the thing, and are the animals alive? Like, then you're not worrying about performing. You're worrying about that.
It's like a magician with pigeons in their hat or something.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I hope the pigeons live.
And there's nothing sadder than a dead pigeon.
I hope the rabbit, and I've been saying that ever since like season 9 happened. I was like, okay, it's going to be May the Queen with the most live doves win. And now here we are literally with the dead butterflies.
Well, at least it's, you know, insects that died. Cause it, you know, like we have a couple of vegan friends and they're just like throwing temper tantrums and asking to boycott once again, RuPaul's Drag Race because they crossed state lines and they killed butterflies. And I said, darling, how many insects died for your broccoli?
That's true. And I don't think that we should boycott RuPaul's Drag Race. I think that the rules should change. Drag Race has always been really good about changing it up when they need to. And I think that if it becomes a contest of who can take off the most costumes, then like that's not really thrilling to me. Mm. And I'm glad Aquaria won because she won the most things during the season and she was the fiercest. So like that should be who wins a crown, I think.
Mm.
Maybe I'm old fashioned.
Do you feel like... Because one of the things that makes that ending exciting from season 9 was that we don't know who's going to win, even though certainly like Shea Coulee was expected to take the crown home.
Well, Shea, a lot of people were certainly rooting for Sasha as well.
And Sasha Peppermint. And Peppermint. And so it was very undecided.
And even Trinity.
And even Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
The Tuck Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we saw that upset, it was like, it was such a sensation.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not fun to sort of invest yourself in a series knowing the outcome.
Sure.
It's nice to have that element there, and I wouldn't want them to get rid of it because I like that unpredictability. And certainly if you've made it to the top three in RuPaul's Drag Race, you don't have nothing to worry about.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't agree with that?
Well, I think some people have made it to the top three and are still having a hard time.
Yeah.
You know,
but that's
a struggle. I mean, it's always a struggle. It's one of those things. It's like when you're a performer, when you're an entertainer, there's always that next hill you have to climb.
And honey, you are soaring just like those sharks in that tornado. Taking a bite out of the entertainment industry in LA.
Mm-hmm. Hallelujah.
Alaska, it's always a pleasure talking to you.
It's great talking to you too. So wait, are you aware that Willem and I are doing a podcast together?
Congratulations.
Are you excited?
Yes.
As a color commentator?
Yes.
I would love to actually be on your podcast.
I would love that.
Yeah, I'll do it in drag, even if it's on audio.
Right. I'm really excited.
Which season and which episode?
I don't know. Take your pick.
Show is you two are getting together and you're commenting on past episodes of RuPaul's Drag Race.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. And we go in order.
Okay.
So we started with season one. So
well,
we're in season one.
We've been big
right now.
Fans of RuPaul's Drag Race since day one. You know, a lot of people think that we're new to drag or we don't know anything about drag. And it's just like, they really do. If you go to Reddit, some of these kids are like, they don't know anything about drag. And it's just like, oh, we've been talking to drag queens for 4 years before Drag Race even started.
I started dressing up in drag 4 years after RuPaul started dressing up in drag.
Okay, girl.
I remember dressing. In fact, we were going out to a club to do a show and my friend brought a cassette tape, put it on the boombox, and said, "This is new drag queen, and she's got a really hit. It's a dance hit, so I don't know if it'll do that well." And I was like, "Well, play it, girl. What is it?" And so I called Supermodel.
Oh my god, what an exciting moment.
And I actually have a photo of myself in drag, very boogery.
Mm-hmm.
and Supermodel came on and instantly we're like, this is going to change the world.
And the drag queen was lip syncing to it, but the battery wore out, so it was like Supermodel.
Oh my god. That's fierce.
So what's your release schedule like?
The podcast came out last week and it has new episodes every Wednesday.
Wow.
And it's called Race Chaser with Alaska and Willem.
Oh,
that's a good name for that.
We were your backup dancers for when you sang that. It was Racer Chaser, though, was your song, right?
Race Chaser, yes.
Race Chaser, yes, your song. We were dressed in wrestling singlets and we had chicken heads. That was so much fun.
And somebody forgot to cut a hole for us to breathe through it.
I did just fine. You just don't breathe.
I had to stick my mouth in the part of the mask where the eye is because I was like,
oh my god.
I almost passed out.
Thank you for suffering for art.
I had to stay alive just to make it to the end. I had so much fun performing with you.
You guys did so good.
And as soon as we took our masks off at the end of the show, people were like, those two?
Right.
I dodged those tomatoes.
And they were like, they pulled out tomatoes, but they didn't have any.
Right.
Well, Alaska, you have fun at your high school reunion.
Oh my God! Yes,
I'll be in Erie like mid-month. So I'll
Mark's going to Erie. We're gonna go to Niagara Falls.
We'll be there like August 15th and 16th and 17th around then.
Oh, awesome.
Have you ever done a show in Niagara Falls?
I feel like I have.
There's like gay bars there and everything.
I feel like I have at some point.
I want to perform at Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum.
Because believe it or not,
this is a beautiful woman. Believe it or not. You don't have to believe it.
Believe it.
Or not. They have like all sorts of really offensive things in there, like weird clothing and skeletons that they probably shouldn't have and all sorts of stuff.
Things they appropriated from cultures.
The world's largest woman, Sandy Allen, who may have been also the world's largest lesbian. She was there in the 80s. And she kind of lived there, yeah. And so, like, I remember as a kid, like, seeing her, like, having my photo taken with her and, like, meeting her, kind of like the way they do meet and greets with drag queens.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like,
she was enormous.
She was like 7 feet something, right?
She was like 8 feet something.
Oh, wow.
And her hands are like twice as big as yours. Yeah.
I want to usurp her title as the largest woman.
Better start eating.
I'm coming for her.
They even have like a suit that you can, like the world's largest man that ever lived, who was buried in a piano coffin. You can stick your head in it and have your photo taken.
Oh, wow.
It's only 90 minutes from where you're staying in here. You should just do a day trip.
All right, cool.
Let's go together to the Believe It or Not Museum. I love you, darling.
Thank you, guys.
Best of luck with everything and all the projects.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. It was great talking to you. I love you both.
Love you too, darling.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Thank you, darling.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 The Last Sharknado, It's About Time, premieres Sunday, August 19th on the Sci-Fi Channel. And of course, check your local guides for the time.
Mm-hmm. I'm so excited for her to be involved in this franchise because it's so ridiculous. And, you know, if you love drag, that's the thing I think a lot of people are drawn to by drag is how ridiculous it can be.
Well, drag is about... Mm-hmm. Building on the ashes of failure. And as LGBT people, we understand what it means like to be dejected, to be cast aside, and turn that trash into treasure. Mm-hmm. Nobody does trash into treasure like Alaska. Thunderfuck! So it's really great to see Hollywood capitalizing on her abilities and putting her on the big screen like she ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
We're fans of Alaska, and we certainly know you guys appreciate her many talents.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to seeing her as well as in the Quiet Room.
Mm-hmm.
It looks that Quiet Room looks actually genuinely disturbing.
Wow, and Katya's in it too, huh?
Yeah, she plays a nurse.
Wow. Scary.
Who's up to no good. Just like the real Katya.
I bet.
Would you like another enema? But well, I mean, it's interesting, right? So
yeah.
It's these artists are in this really delicate space right now in their careers because they're known for being these outrageous, hilarious, campy, transcendent, costumed personalities. But at their core, they're also really capable performers. And a good film director understands that and uses that as a strength, as a tool. And so, right now we're starting to see the first sort of mainstreaming of these big successful names from Drag Race.
Mm.
What will the future hold like? What kind of films would you guys like to see Alaska and the other Drag Race girls be in?
Mm-hmm. Little Women.
That would be amazing.
Little Women done with drag queens.
Well, you know, there's a film that actually gets turned into a play called The Women.
Well, I believe it's a play.
It's originally a play, but it was, you know, made into a film, mm-hmm. and that's how everybody sort of remembers this film. And mm-hmm. the phrase, "Oh, Mary," mm-hmm. comes from that. Mm-hmm. And since then, a lot of theater companies around the world have transformed it back into its play with drag queens performing it.
Well, that's not really true.
No?
No, it's not
they
true.
Don't
actually,
do that?
It's actually written into the rights of the script that men are not allowed to play it in a play. However,
but they still do it anyway.
They have stage readings of it.
Oh.
And that's how they get around that.
They don't want to do that.
They don't. It's forbidden for men to actually play those.
But people
roles.
Are. I've seen theater companies doing it. They just don't publicize it.
Stage readings is what yeah. you probably have seen. It's not the actual
stage
play.
Readings with a cast and a set, and not the script and lighting. Mm-hmm. But it's still a for legal purposes mm-hmm. a reading.
Yeah.
Just like.
Read it, girl.
Reading, girl. Reading is fundamental. Mm-hmm. And the Hunter University and all sorts mm-hmm. of great t-shirts and merchandise inspired by great moments in drag is available on our store, feastoffun.com/store.
If you'd like to support this program, the best way to do that is to become a Plus member, and you can do that at feastoffun.com/plus. If it weren't for those people who support the show, we wouldn't be able to talk to such fabulous queens as Alaska and put it out on the airwaves.
This is the only in-depth interview Alaska's done so far about Sharknado. Mm-hmm. Aren't you glad that mm-hmm. she did this?
Yes.
I thought it was amazing. Mm-hmm. If you guys are casual listeners and want to give us a tip, go to feastoffun.com/donate and put a little tip in our tip jar. We really greatly appreciate it. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Thank you so much for listening.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back.